Hello and welcome to episode 15 of Brew and Bite, Tiger Girl and the Geekometer, sponsored by the London Mac User Group. I'm your host, Craig. The panel is here, a very special guest is here, and we have a fun-packed show over the next hour where we look at our first experiences of Mac OS X as we celebrate its 20th anniversary. Is latest tech being held up by lack of chips? And is Justin really just an ordinary guy? And also, are you guilty of having a desktop full of files that you can't find the wallpaper? Then today, this is the show for you. First up, we will say hello to Tina. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Good evening, everyone. Or good morning, depending on where you're listening.
Thank you. And let's say hello to Martin. How are you?
Hello, good evening. Yeah, I'm fine. Working through a lovely weekend this weekend. It's been nice to out there to get out and have a walk around. Yeah, it's been a good weekend so far. And let's hope we don't ruin it for everyone with the next half hour.
And we'll say hello this evening to Alistair. How are you this evening?
Great to be here and see everyone. It's nice to have a sort of nice quiet weekend after having a series of very busy weeks being online and doing training. So
that's brilliant. And this evening we're also joined by a very special guest, and I'm told now an electric bike owner as well as a photographer and automation expert. Let's say hello this evening to Bakari. How are you this evening?
Well, good afternoon here and good evening there. I'm doing great. Glad to be here. And thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
No, we're really looking forward to this evening. I wonder if you don't mind if you could tell us a little bit about yourself for the listeners.
Okay, well, my name is Bakari Shabanu, and I've been doing Mac Automation Tips blog for like 2015, and I've been writing about Apple and Apple software for probably 20 years or so, off and on. I was a teacher for a while, and then I did photography, and that's when I kind of really got into using the Mac for photography and videography, and that kind of led me to, you know, using automation as well for those kind of workflows. Now I work for two education nonprofits, so I just spend a lot of my time there. And I also do some web development as well. So, you know, work with those organizations to do web development. But my passion is still, you know, automation, and it's a little niche that I just kind of cultivated and kind of a side hobby of mine. I don't do it as a full-time job or anything like that. But yeah, that's mainly what I do, just been kind of keeping that website going.
And where can the listeners find some more information about all this wonderful automation that you do?
Well, mainly want to go to macautomationtips.com. And I've also finally started a membership portal there as well, so we can talk about that a little bit later. But macautomationtips.com is there, and then we also have a YouTube channel, which I don't keep up regularly, but you know, there's enough content there if you're new to it. You know, there's enough there for you to get started.
That's brilliant, thank you. So as usual, we always dive into the start of our show with some Apple news this week, and first of all, we have a birthday to celebrate. As we say, happy 20th anniversary to Mac OS X. Who would like to jump in first about their experiences with their Mac OS X? Or firstly, where did you start with Mac OS, before or after?
I go back to the mid-90s, really, when I first encountered Macs. The company I was working for had a Mac system. So I think it was Mac 7.5 or something, or Mac 8 that we first started using. And I remember thinking at the time that this was behind Windows at the time. Windows seemed to have progressed on. Windows 95. I think was out, and Windows NT, and they seemed to be leading the way. And of course, at that time, Mac were, I think Apple was struggling to update their system. I remember the codename Copeland, I think, was thrown around as the new big thing for Mac, and I don't think they ever managed to get that up and running. Was it the other one was Raspberry, I think? And of course, then the powers that be that they bought out Next Step, wasn't it? That had a running OS system. Next OS, I think, was the name of it, and Apple saw that as the way forward. Although they bought out Next out in 95, it still took them 5 or 6 years to turn that system into OS X. That was quite a leap forward from 9.1, I think we were. So OS X was a big step forward. It took them several years to get the bugs out of it just to create the original OS X. And if you look at it now, 20 years later, the system has matured and developed and grown from those initial. But the basic kernel there of Next OS is still in even something like OS iPad. the system they're using for that and phones. It's been quite a development, really, and I suppose it must be one of the longest OSs out there running at the moment, considering it's over 20 plus years.
And it's no more crashes, because I know before 10, I mean, I had some brutal times when you're working with video and your thing and your computer just crashed and you had to start over, or if you didn't get it backed up or whatever. With 10, it really got solid. I mean, there was some bumpy up and down in those 10s, but it got really more solid over time.
It also developed where it could go back to its previous condition, which saved you an awful lot of heart attack, because the old-fashioned way was, you know, you hit the Control S button almost as often as you hit the Shift bar, just to make sure you were going through. And you learned through experience that before you shifted to another program to check something else out, you saved. What was that? The spinning beach ball of death that you.
Oh yeah.
Oh no. So I learned to save as often as I could. It was just a way of life in them days. But yeah, look at it now. I can't honestly think the last time I had a crash on my machine.
And what was Alistair's first experience?
We had at the school I was at, the art department had one of the original Mac. You know, the Macintosh, you know, the original beige ones with the little tiny 7-inch monitor screens. And we would use that mainly for like word processing when we had to type something out. The main computers we had at the school I was at were Acorn, which is the A of ARM. And then I went to college, and the first time I see Apples were, okay, we're now going to go on to ClarisWorks. And we learn on these beige G3s. I'm like, ooh, this is quite fun. And then they said, okay, now eject your diskettes. And go, how do I eject it? And they said, well, drag it to the trash. And that was like the most scary thing around. You know, this was illogical. You know, you drag it to there. But then we learned how to do simple things on, what was it, OS 8, I think 8.3 or something. Mm-hmm. And a couple of things that we learned very quickly was, one, how to do memory management of Photoshop. Because Photoshop, if you wanted to put more than something simple, a layer, and do something, you had to sort of quit Photoshop, then go to Command I, then you would then adjust the memory by manual doing it, and you would have to sort of work out what the numbers were. So if you wanted to increase it up, and then you'd restart it, and then you'd have to make sure everything else was closed. Other cool thing we had was, do you remember sad Mac errors? You know, the little Mac with the little X's over its eyes. And so when the Mac used to crash, I had a printout of all the different sad Mac errors, so I knew what it was. And so when I bought my first G3 blue and white, I had like the startup disk in the drawer nearby, because you would have to occasionally reboot off CD drive or something to reinstall. And I've been on it since then. If I remember correctly, I went OS 10, then 1, then skipped to 3. So then I had Panther for ages, which I loved. Then I then jumped from Panther to Snow Leopard. And then from Snow Leopard, I went up every increment of it. So I've got every single operating system, and I've tracked down the ones I didn't have. So I've tracked down the Leopard, which was notoriously hard to find.
Does the word geek come to mind at any stage here?
Yes. But remember, I work in IT support, so I needed to have copies of them.
Come on, Alistair. Alistair, need, want. I'm not sure that there's a difference at this point.
There was a time when I was having to install an awful lot of Leopard, because there was an awful lot of people in the production industry who weren't allowed to move forwards because everything was tied to that operating system. I think the main thing I like about OS X is you don't have to manage it. It manages itself. Two, you didn't have to worry about some program installing a plugin and having to go and hunt for which plugin got updated and crashed the system when it started up. Do you remember all the little icons that loaded when you opened up OS 9? Picture management was big. Preview. Now, we all think Preview is a nice little program. There was no Preview. No, it's not. To open up a photograph was quite a tricky task. Apple has done very well, and considering it's sitting on Unix, it's doing brilliant. I think, isn't it? If you start up in single user mode, you'll still see it says BSD Berkeley Standard Distribution, and so they still got the original. We want to reference where we are in where we came from in California, and they still got all that lovely tradition attached to it.
And what was Tina's experience?
I'm your classic. I'm the person that was got by, is it they call the halo effect? So I got an iPod. I got an iPod Classic. I liked it. There were lots of hints of other things you could do if only you had a Mac. One of my friends was really into Mac. So I got a Mac Mini in about 2003, for 2005. So my first operating system was Tiger. And it was a real shock because the idea that you could have software that was licensed to you and you could have more than one on different machines. Having come from Windows where everything had to be licensed, when I moved from my Mac Mini to my first MacBook, I was expecting to have to buy new software. And all these people in the Apple store were looking at me like I was mad because I didn't know how to like transfer it across and they helped me. And I could use all my software. I bought the new machine, but the software belonged to me. It was a real shock. And unlike Alistair, I just bought everything they told me to. So when it upgraded to Leopard, I went. So I'm a Tiger girl. And I can still remember, is it the video, when they did the swapping over from the Tigers to the new name? They were going to claim it was going to go from, is it from Lion? And then I was at an LMUG WBC show and it said we're going to go from Lion to Sea Lion. And at that point, our internet connection stuttered and we lost the feed for a bit and we're all going, Sea Lion, really? So I'm a newbie, even though as a newbie, that's what, 15, 16 years now.
My experience is slightly different. So I can remember being at school and there being this very funny looking beige box that you put a square disk, also known as floppy disks, into the machine, and remembering the iconic chugging noise that it used to do. But one of the very first things that I remember with Mac OS was standing outside Regent Street store and there being a very long queue for when a software update came out in a box. And I can remember standing outside Regent Street to go and collect Mac OS 10.5. I think it was Leopard at that point, and being given a black and pink colored t-shirt, which is no longer a thing anymore. I think the first 100 people were given a t-shirt when they bought the Mac OS. Do any of you also remember the fact that there was actually more than one version? You could buy Mac OS Family Pack, which you was allowed to install on 5 other machines. A long gone thing in terms of packaging. That's when apps came in a box rather than in a download.
There are things that I still miss though, because I used to have a .Mac account. And you had almost like, it wasn't a website, but they had like galleries that you could share with friends of photos. And I sort of miss that. And every now and then, and obviously you can do it. I've got a Flickr account that I am underusing presently. But that was great. And that was another time when I realized that Apple was different, because there was a problem to do with the .Mac account when they changed it or they upgraded it. And I can remember there was a problem with half the users weren't getting their thing, and everyone got an extra 3 months. It was like Christmas, because actually my account, I'd had no problems at all, but suddenly I got this, oh, there's been some problems, some users have had this, we're going to give you an extra month. And then a little while later it says still not sorted, another 2 months. They came to me with the problem and said, yeah, we're gonna do it. It made me feel very positive.
On that subject, I'm sure any Mac user has seen this week and remembers Mac and PC ads. There has been some controversial information this week in regards to Intel and their new advertising campaign. And has Justin really swapped sides and joined the dark side in Intel? Don't know if any of you have seen these or have any thoughts. I'm sure Martin has something to chip in on this one.
Yeah, I've watched them all. And fair play to the guy. He's an actor. He's got to earn his money. He gets paid to do a job. And I think that's what he's obviously done. But I kind of detected a little sort of smirk in his delivery about saying, I'm Justin, I'm just an ordinary guy, let's have a look at Mac versus PC. And there's a slight tone in his voice if you watch the adverts that I think he realizes he's done a good job here getting money from both sides. The ads themselves I just think are pretty pathetic. If those of you can remember back the original PC Mac adverts back, what, they must be what, 15 years ago now, I think they were taking major points about what was going on to do an advert about, oh look, you can get all these multicolored different PCs, but Macs only come in grey, was just, I think, just desperation. I don't know whether Intel obviously got the pip that they've been removed from supplying chips and they're trying to prove. But the fact that they're proving, oh, okay, this one you can fold in half, this one's got a bigger touchscreen, just Macs of either were really teed off and were going to have a go, or just desperation to try and get it back. So, yeah, no, but it was interesting to go back and watch the original PC Mac adverts. I forgot how good some of them were. The one where the Mac, where the PC crashes and the guy falls over, was just brilliant. It's just, so if you want to see a funny Mac PC advert, go back and look at the originals. They're all there on YouTube. But yeah, I just think Intel have really scored an own goal there.
They just seem a little bit negative. They're not telling me why I should be getting an Intel. In the UK, for a long while, we had laws to say that you could advertise, but you couldn't directly reference your competitor. So we're not used to adverts that say, we're great, they're rubbish. So I don't like them. And therefore, if Intel did an advert with, okay, and then Justin said, I'm picking these computers because of this, I'm fine with that. I still would be thinking, Justin, what are you doing apart from taking the money? But I accept that he needs to earn a living. The comparison, I don't see the point. Don't tell me, oh, look, that's grey. Apart from the fact, obviously, you can get it in different colours than grey. So that's, strictly speaking, is not accurate. But why should I buy an Intel? And why I should buy an Intel is not because Macs are grey. They've got to sell me a positive reason.
When I went back and looked at the old set of adverts, they do make reference several times in the Mac adverts that they don't suffer from bugs and viruses and the things that were going on with PCs at the time. And it harks back to what we just discussed about OS X. If you look at that over the last 20 years, there's never been a successful virus or malware or bug that's really got out into the public on OS X. They've maintained that security. I know we've had the odd one here and then, a few little bits and pieces, but nothing compared to some of the issues that have been raised within the Intel environment. So, yeah, it was interesting to see that in light of what we just said about the 20th anniversary.
On that subject, that actually quite nicely leads into problems with chips. Not blaming Intel on this one, but am I right in saying that we are suspected to see a global shortage of chips? And I'm sure Alistair can enlighten us some more information as to why this is happening.
You may recall that there were two big consoles that came out before Christmas. So that was already putting a lot of pressure to have the high-end chips be produced for these two big manufacturers. Then we have China having to shut down a number of their big factories which produce these chips or assemble them into other components. And I was reading somewhere which said that it takes between 5 to 6 weeks to get the factories back up to running again. Once they've been closed, they have to make sure the clean rooms are cleared and they have to bring everyone back to the full speed. And there was a fire, if I remember rightly, in one of these factories, which knocked out production as well. What's happening is they're having to sort of backstep slightly and say, well, we can't produce these high-end ones, but we can produce these lower-end chips. Also, we've got a slight issue that mobile phones are now just as popular as computers, and so we've got more demand on computer chips than we had previously, and they hadn't built in enough slack in the system to pile up the difference, because we've now got the two competing systems. Because Apple have moved over to the mobile phone style, which is ARM, and Intel are going down the other route, which is sort of graphics and other stuff. And Intel are not at fault so much in this side, it's the manufacturers who are all sort of wanting the newer, bigger, greater machines, and then oops, we can't get them. So what we may get is, and this may happen again, last time we had this big problem, do you remember we got netbooks come out? And the reason the netbooks came out was because they were easy to produce on the Celeron processor, because that's what Intel could produce at speed. And then this whole new series invented. So we may end up with a whole new series of stick your mobile phone into this chassis and you now have a semi-Mac. You know, it's a sort of, you might end up with some interesting hybrids come out. What's your thinking on this, Craig?
I know recently, especially for the UK, it might be different for the US, but it seems to have come up a lot that it's affecting the car industry a lot as well. And I think part of that is to do with the pandemic. Factories have been closed, as you said, Alistair. But then there's been so much more of a demand on electrical devices at home. So many people are working from home now. So initially, everybody's been and gone, at least bought some form of laptop or webcam, again, all needing chips. The other thing that I thought of was in regards to supply chain. So a lot of from Apple rumor news is that Apple are supposedly moving some of their supply chain aspects necessarily out of China. I think that might also be another backlog to where these chips are coming from. But as usual, Apple have been one step ahead in that they've pre-ordered a lot of this stock before some of the other manufacturers. So that kind of might work in their favor this time around.
You're right in that it's just not the car industry, but every industry now is so dependent on chips. You know, even your electric kettle has got a chip in it, and your hairdryer and your video doorbell camera and everything. So the demand for chips, as you say, Alistair, has soared through the roof. And they haven't managed to keep up with production levels. So, okay, the COVID has had a massive effect on that as well. I think I've said to you that China apparently needs 80,000 empty containers back each month to get out its stock. So if that's all held up, the whole thing can easily disintegrate. So, yeah, and as I said, it could have knock-on effects to Apple's production of their new machines this year.
Do you think this has a lot to do with Apple not having an Apple keynote this month? Because usually around March, well, they're not going to have one in March. I mean, they might have one in April. I'm just wondering if something got backed up that much.
The rumour mills were quite sure that there was going to be a March event. I think most of us thought that was going to happen from what we were hearing.
They could, as we speak, they could be doing the filming and they could release it when they feel like it.
They've been burnt in the past when they said they're going to release something, you know, next month, and then they can't get the product. And they get terrible bad press about, you know, saying one thing and then doing another. So until they have the capacity in the supply chain to launch something, then I think you'll find they'll hang back. But then again, they're not too shy about announcing something. Oh, we're going to bring a new computer out in August. To put you off from buying anything else until you see what's out in August.
I know we're all sitting there wishing, oh, there's a new product, or we're hanging on, but somebody important lost something very important this week. Major Apple leaker John Prosser lost his eyebrows over a leak. I don't know if any of you saw that. So he took a gamble and said that there was definitely going to be an Apple event, and if there wasn't, he would shave his eyebrows off.
Let's just say
his Face ID is now struggling to unlock his device.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's now missing a few vital pieces of his facial expression.
Yeah. I don't think I'll be making that kind of deal with anyone soon. No, we'll wait.
That's my idea for the live show gone out the window then, Martin. So this week we were thinking about different ideas for the podcast and what we should look at next. And one particular thing that I'm sure we're all guilty of is wasting lots of time in front of a screen, especially in this time. So I thought, why not? Let's look at best practices about staying organized and, most importantly, being productive in our time. And there'd be no one better to ask than our automation expert, Bakari. So my first question will be, how do you stay productive?
Well, that's a constant thing. And I've been working on that for probably 20 years. But I use an app called Timing, which automatically tracks everything that you do on your Mac. So since this is where I work, you know, all day, I really wanted to see where I was spending my time. And also I clock my time for the organizations that I work for as well. Just really making sure that I'm not wasting too much time or taking too long to do a landing page or work on a website. But I spend a lot of time troubleshooting stuff. That's what takes up a lot of my time. It's incredible how much time it can take in, say, things don't work in WordPress, or you start using some online application, there's a problem with it, and you have to talk to the tech people, or you got to talk to your server. So that's where I have to kind of really watch my time, making sure that I don't spend too much time on those things. But usually Timing is doing it, and I try to automate Keyboard Maestro to do, like when I come into my office, it'll have certain websites already open for me or certain applications already open depending on the day that is there. For my Zoom meetings, for example, it will open up the Zoom 5 minutes before the meeting. So that's automatic, kind of reminds me of what I need to do. So that's how I stay productive. It's just, and I use it to do a task manager as well. So that's my productivity.
That's brilliant. The one question I was going to say is, how do you manage so many different types of automation on a Mac?
That's a good question. You know, when you're on the computer, your hand is either on your keyboard or it's on your trackpad, right? And so I want to be able to trigger wherever my hand is. I don't want to have to take my hand back to my keyboard when I could trigger on my trackpad. So my biggest application that I use is Better Touch Tool. Have you heard of that one? Better Touch Tool is sort of like you can trigger any keyboard shortcut, you can trigger any menu item, you can trigger lots of different predefined actions in there. It has hundreds of those. And so if my hand is already there, I want to be able to trigger something. So if I want to, say I want to close tabs on Safari, for example, I don't want to have to take my hand back to my trackpad to do, you know, Command W or whatever. I could just do right there on my trackpad. And so just really nice. So I could not live without Better Touch Tool for sure. That's the one application. I did a course on that first because it's the one I think if you're going to get into kind of Mac automation or triggering, you want to use that first.
It's interesting you mentioned that app, and something that might be really useful for people at the moment is being able to go on mute. So I actually use Better Touch Tool. I draw a circle on the trackpad, which controls the volume up and down, or to quickly jump into mute, or I've shortcut some keys. Something else that I've been delving into that kind of goes to our geekometer, as we was describing. For those of you that use PlayStation or game controllers with the Mac, I've actually customized a game controller so that I can flick automations to run based on which buttons are on the keypad.
That's the beauty and the fun of it. In Keyboard Maestro, they have a thing called applications triggers. And so when I open up Zoom, it will automatically mute my music just playing. So because that's just saying that, hey, I'm going to be on Zoom, I'm doing background music. And it just saves me the time, you know, the clicking all that. And it's really great. It's so much fun. I mean, I've done a lot of macros and triggers. I probably have like, I don't know, 500 of those different things. I don't use them all, but it's just really fun when you figure it out and it runs for you. You just get a kick out of saving some clicking time or saving some mouse movements or using a keyboard shortcut or whatever. You just save time.
One thing I'm sure we're all guilty of, and I'm going to ask Tina this question. Are you one of these people that has a folder on their desktop called desktop and you end up filling it with all your junk or all your little notes and then it just expands and then you've got nowhere to put it and you end up backing it up onto an external drive thinking one day I'll sort that? I don't know if you're that guilty. I have been in the past.
What I have got is something I call To Do, because there are two different issues. I don't tend to put stuff on the desktop because I want to make sure, because some of my stuff I use Dropbox as a sort of way of backing up, but I also do Time Machine, but also I have two laptops. So anything I change on one changes on the other. And that's really why I've got Dropbox. So I do put it in To Do, but it's linked. But then every so often I'll realize that I'm not going to do that. So I put it somewhere else.
You ever heard of Hazel? Hazel is a one, you ought to look at that one. It's a folder application and it will move files for you automatically. So I don't like having files on my desktop. I just can't stand the clutter. And what it will do is if I put files on my desktop, after 3 hours, I think it's 3 hours, something like that, if it's still on there, they get moved to a junk folder. And because that means I've had plenty of time to use them and, you know, what have you. Then if I still need them, I go to the junk folder. And then after a certain amount of time in the junk folder, they get sent to the trash. And that's my workflow. But it also moves. I have files. I get PDFs moved to my Dropbox. So if I have PDFs downloaded into my downloads folder, right, and it's been sitting there for a specified amount of time, then Hazel will move those off downloads into my Dropbox folder so I can reach them there on my iPad, because I read my PDFs on my iPad. You might want to check in Hazel. It's a lot of, you can set up a lot of different rules to move your files based upon the rules that you set, and you can use your Dropbox at the same time. And it keeps me organized. It keeps my photos organized, my screenshots, that kind of thing.
It's interesting you mentioned that. I actually really love this program and I like just playing with it because there's so many different customizations that you can do. I have a slightly different system in that I hate having files on my desktop. So I have one folder that's nicknamed after a Harry Potter reference. I have the Sorting Hat folder. Anything that's on the desktop gets moved into the Sorting Hat and then it's allocated to different folders. So it might be that it's a JPEG and it's sent to a particular folder. My favorite one is if it's an installer file. So it'll look for DMGs or packets and it will pick up if I've not opened it for 3 or 4 weeks. It will either archive it or it will trash it. And that has saved my downloads folder maybe 20 gig a month in how it manages and looks after that folder. I don't know if Martin has a similar setup.
You're quite right. I do have a desktop folder on the desktop, which says desktop check with a big question mark. And anything, I just throw it in there. Like when I have time, I go through it and clear them all out. Now, I've just opened it up and there's files in there from 2013. I'm just looking there, Mike. There's 532 gigabytes of stuff in there. that folder. So guess what I'm going to be doing later on tonight, guys? No. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you for reminding me that I need to stay up all night and I think and do that. Yeah. Yeah. You're right. I'm terrible for doing that. A file, I think, is it a photo? Does I want to keep? Just throw it in that folder. Keep desktop. It's lovely and clear. No clutter on it. A few folders I need to go to. Just that one big, it should be flashing bright red, shouldn't it, saying clean me? But no, it's my god, 2013, what was that? There you go, look at that. It's a to-do list done in August 2013, and I still haven't done it.
So I'm intrigued by both Bakari and Craig's idea of having magic folders in to use a better way. It's an interesting concept I hadn't really thought about. I'm old-fashioned and I do it all by hand, but it does seem like quite a clever idea to move it away and to Dropbox or to other folders. Now, the question I would have is this. Do you, when it comes to installers, do you have like a setting which says what is good or what's not good to keep around? Because you know how sometimes you can have a good installer and a bad installer because they have different iterations of updates. Do you keep those around on an external drive or do you just rely on the internet to be able to give you stuff?
Yeah, I just download it again. I don't keep. I'm kind of a minimalist, you know. I'm paperless, you know. I haven't used a printer in, I don't know, since my kids were in high school. And so I delete them and go get them again if I need them. Now, but I don't. Maybe some people might have more technical, you know, needs than I do. But just for, you know, application updates, I'm fine. New applications. If it's a DMG file or whatever, it just gets thrown into trash like after an hour. So I rarely drag folders to my trash can. If I have files in my trash can, if I have some on my desktop I want to get rid of immediately, I just do a three-finger click on the file. It just sends it to the trash can. And then Hazel will empty my trash for me after a certain amount of storage in there. So if it's like, I think, a gigabyte or something of stuff in my trash can or whatever, it would just empty it for me. You know, if anything is going to save me a click, you know, or a movement, I'll take it. You know, I just don't like clicking all day. You know, anytime I can save a click or a tap, you know, it's wonderful.
Does anyone here use optimized storage on the Mac, i.e. you store your files not on your Mac, but in iCloud? So that's your documents, your downloads.
Yeah, that's my primary storage facility. And then all my backups are done based upon that process.
So is the reason that you store your downloads and other files in iCloud because of backup or because you have an internal drive which is small? I'm just out of interest here.
Yeah, I have a small hard drive. It's only 512 drive, so it doesn't store a lot. So yeah, I tend to store, yeah, if I need them, put them into DMGs and stuff like that. I use it and then clear it and trash it. I do tend to keep my downloads folder quite well controlled because it's very easy for that to run out of control and use up what limited memory I've got on the machine.
I can actually share an oddity in regards to something being automated. I know we're all big fans of Carbon Copy Cloner, but do you use Carbon Copy Cloner for anything else? The interesting thing people don't realize is that you can sync folders with Carbon Copy Cloner and you can sync across networks. I have an old machine in here that's just purely used as backups. So anything I drop into this particular folder then syncs across the network using Carbon Copy. And the nice thing with Carbon Copy is that you can set when and where you want it to happen, what time of day, or even tell the machine to switch off once it's completed. So every night there's one particular folder, being a photographer, that I back up. So it backs up that folder and then I wake up the next morning to find the machine has turned itself off nicely and ready to go for the next day.
Awesome. I'll have to look that up. You know, for some reason, Time Machine is a bug in there that causes, it messes up my external drive for some reason. So I use Carbon Copy to back up my Mac, but I didn't know that you could do the backup single folders, which makes sense. I never tried. I have iCloud, so I keep all my documents and photos in the iCloud. So that I feel safe enough with that. But yeah.
I'd say the one thing I do on my Mac, which is automated, which is probably the one thing which I can't understand why more people don't do, is if you're doing screenshots, they always appear on your desktop. Now, I find that most infuriating. What I have is I have a simple folder that says screenshots. So all the screen grabs, screenshots all get put into that folder. So you just change the preference file. You can do it with Tinkertool, or there used to be a brilliant program called Blacktree, which does it. And you just change it. And I change it from a PNG to a JPEG. And then I also have it go into a folder, because the chances are, you want to have a series of these photos, which you're putting together, especially if you're researching something. And then you may be away for a week or two and then come back to it. And then you want to just search through your screenshots, and you can use it as a way of tracking what you were doing, because it has the date, the time, what was the site you're looking at, and you can use it as a reference point. I can't understand why everyone just wants to have hundreds and hundreds of these sort of screenshots sitting on their desktop. Whereas once you've taken the image, it's wasting space. And so I find it very helpful just having this little folder that says screenshots. I'm old fashioned. I have bits of paper around my desk, which I write notes on, and those are my to-do lists. And I have different colored ones, you see, so different things like that. It might have something to do with the fact that I'm dyslexic. So if I have something physical, I can hold it and I can count them. And then I have tons and tons of screenshots, because a picture says 1,000 words. And so for someone who doesn't like writing, if I can have a picture of what I need to do and then draw and preview what it is I need to do, that's quicker for me than actually writing it down.
I was going to recommend, you know how the current version of, I think it was Catalina started, where if you took a screenshot, it will show you a preview at the corner of that shot, right? So it won't go immediately to the desktop. But there's an application called ScreenFloat that I think works better, and I use it all the time. And it just, every time I take a screenshot, I use a finger gesture to trigger that shortcut for ScreenFloat, and I take a screenshot and it pops up as preview. And usually it's great, because I'm like, if I'm writing an article or if I'm doing something, I need to reference the shot while I'm doing whatever I'm doing. It just saves a lot of time. Or I might take a shot for a reminder, a coupon or a grocery sale or something, and I want to remind to go there at the end of the day and take a shot of it and keep it open. But ScreenFloat is really nice, because you can just click it off and it automatically goes to the ScreenFloat library, and all my screenshots are right there. And I can also hide them by taking my cursor to the corner, to the right corner of my desktop, and it will hide all the ones that are still open. So if I just wanted to get rid of them really quickly, real quick, I can just hide them and then bring them back when I'm ready to manage them. So that's a real good application. And they have some similar ones. I think there's a newer one out. I'll get the name of it, but they have similar ones to ScreenFloat. But definitely try that out. It's really great.
ScreenFloat is a program I've used for many years. I mean, you use it just for recording things, little videos, or to show someone, you know, go here, then do that. And it's sometimes a lot quicker. But yes, I hadn't tried that. It's a good idea.
Could I ask, what's your best method of managing photos on the Mac?
I'm not a photographer anymore, but I definitely back in the day used Aperture and Lightroom, and that's how I managed all my files at that point. And I used to always have to put them on CDs and external drives as well, because I didn't want to lose wedding photos, because there's no excuses when you lose wedding photos. You know, now in terms of management, I don't really like Apple's photo application, so I don't use it very much at all. You know, but that's pretty much where I organize my, you know, my photos there. I do a lot of screenshots, so I just kind of keep screenshots in, as well as I have a couple of folders that I use for particular screenshots that maybe go along with my website work that I'm doing, or web development work. So most of the stuff is just in the Finder. I don't have anything really special. Hazel will move some of my specified images for me. I set up rules for that. But I don't do photography like I used to, so I don't have to have that worry, that pain. I know it's a pain.
That is true. I'm dealing with huge amounts of files at the moment. But I had one really, really geeky Hazel question, which you may or may not know the answer. So I use a file structure that's based on year, month, day, so that Hazel will actually automatically sort them. However, I've seen this come up before, is if you're copying files off of another drive, it can't sort them correctly, because the parameters that it uses is the date the file was created. So if you drag and drop onto a system, it's changing the creation date. I wonder if you've come across that or found any solutions.
No, I have had a problem with Hazel may not having a rule that I need in order to get it done. Not that particular one, but it does lack that. You may look at Keyboard Maestro to see if it can do that, because Keyboard Maestro can do folded triggers as well, like Hazel. They're a little bit more, it's not as easy in Keyboard Maestro, but yeah, check there and see.
No, something that I was going to suggest is, I'm sure all of us are familiar with Rogue Amoeba's software and the different things that they produce. It's very much drag and drop. But have any of you come across a Rogue Amoeba version to deal with photos? Have any of you come across this wonderful name for a developer or a company name called the Flying Meat Company? Make a program that's called RetroBatch, and it actually lets you drag and drop preferences or rules similar to Hazel, but purely for photography.
They did Acorn.
Yes, they did.
Acorn, the image editor, yes.
So this is quite clever. What this program allows you to do is manage your photo files in different ways. So examples being, it can do color adjustment, it can rename an entire batch of folders, overlay some images, it can actually round corner some of the images if you ever use that for web. The interesting thing with this one is it can actually use some AI technology to scan what's in the photo. So it will categorize photographs based on the image. So if you've got pictures of cats, or you've got pictures of children or cars, it will do its utmost to categorize them in the right folder based on those parameters. That comes highly recommended. It's not that expensive. You can also download a demo version for a week and have a play with it. So that's certainly worthwhile. It's really useful if you're doing lots of things based on a similar parameter, like applying a filter to an entire batch of photos, or you want to put a company logo in a photo. But by all means, give that one a go. So Martin and Tina, do you have any suggestions?
We're Aperture lovers, and we're really disappointed that Apple didn't continue with Aperture.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
It's my go-to or default photo storage thing.
Yeah.
But the trouble is now it doesn't even with the latest upgrades by Retrospect, it can't show videos. So all the videos I have stored in there I'm unable to access them or use them in that format. So I've got to look at something new. I've got to find something that I can store.
You're still using it though? You're using it for it?
I'm still using it. Yeah, it's still.
Oh, wow.
There was a company made, I think they're called Retroactive, and they produced an application which brings Aperture up to date. It has lost some of its functionality regarding videos. So that's why we started this process of what I don't like Lightroom. Doesn't seem to work for me, but I'm loath to transfer everything over. So as long as Aperture continues to see my old archive libraries, I'll live with that. And I've even started to explore photos again. It's quite surprising how sophisticated that application has become. I went into it the other day. I hadn't used it for ages. And the amount of work that you can do in it, the amount of photo manipulation, is pretty impressive.
What I liked about Aperture is that you could structure your library, and I do year, month, and then whatever the event is. And I like the fact that I could reference the files, not import them, so I knew where they were at all times. But a lot, and you could rate them easily. That's what I want to replicate, because I'll be honest, if I want to change a file, I could do a quick manipulation in Photos if I was using it, and anything more serious I'd use Photoshop Elements.
The thing I used to like about Aperture was that, let's say I'd do some of the work with the Young Enterprise, they do these show stands and display stands. So I'm taking loads of photographs of both the team, the members, what they're producing, wide shots, short shots, item shots, the whole works. When I come back, very quickly in Aperture, I can very quickly start setting them down to the pictures relating to Team Aqua or whatever. And then I can go through those 40-odd photographs and very quickly, clicking through one at a time, hit the four-star button, and that will reduce it down to maybe 20. Then I go into those 20 and again up them to five stars. Now I have the half dozen photographs that I may want to use in the slideshow or the video I'm producing. So from that point of view, Aperture was excellent. You're right that mm-hmm. you could very quickly narrow down what you wanted to and put everything into folders and stuff like that. That feature, you can do it in Photos, surprisingly, but it takes a bit more work. You've got to tag photographs and put in items like that. So it's not quite as quick.
Yeah, I just find the photos, you can't switch libraries. But I think you have to quit one and open another one. And in Aperture, you can switch them so much easier. I don't know. The Apple just seemed like they kind of dropped the ball on that after they let go of Aperture. And I know they were in competition with Lightroom or whatever, but they dropped the ball on that. It was very disappointing.
I think I did hear rumors that apparently there was a deal struck with Adobe. Correct me if I'm wrong on this, that they wouldn't support, that they'd put pressure on support for Photoshop and other elements for Apple if they continued with the Aperture product. That's why they switched out photos. That could just be a nasty rumor or a wild guess. I don't know. But it did seem strange that Aperture was a very sophisticated program that got dropped.
Yeah.
So that surprised me. And I was one of the many who railed against that when it came out. And initially poo-pooed photos. I know it's a bit like comparing Final Cut Pro to iMovie. But if you actually, I'm surprised, if you go into Photos now, it is a very sophisticated program. If they could improve the photo management in there, in that system, then it would be worthwhile successor to Aperture, I think. And that might be one of the areas where Automator could come quite useful. If you could link Automator procedures with Photos, that you could easily do your batch storage and batch filing using an Automator script, that could very well be a very useful item.
I think, you know, on Automator, I think they really have let that go as well. If you look in there, some of the actions in Automator don't even work. They're kind of outdated. They got rid of the guy that actually helped create it. They just have not put work into it. And I've asked, you know, people have asked me about, you know, should you use Automator? And I always say go to Keyboard Maestro because it's much more versatile, has many more actions. And I think they just kind of like, they leave it there and they keep it going because they know some people use it, but I don't think they've done anything to develop it anymore. And they got rid of the creator of it. So he's still around, but they do a lot less work on the software, it seems to me, than they do on the hardware, of course. That's where they make most of their money, well, make pretty much all their money is on hardware and the services that they provide now. But Automator is just not there anymore.
They do seem to have moved away. I suppose you can't blame them to a certain extent. The success of the iPhone has meant they've put the considerable effort into developing the iOS rather than continue with the Pro applications that they were so good for. So there could be something in that's where their bread and butter is. The millions of people compared to the number of people who use a Mac as a computer compared to the number having iPhones. I suppose there had to be some consideration as that's where the future lay. For us older diehards who hark back to these, what I thought were exceptional Pro products. It's so frustrating because if you use Final Cut Pro, which I do, it's still one of the best out there. I love working with Final Cut Pro, but as I said, just disappointed that they've let Aperture go away so much.
There was a theory which said that if you looked at it, when El Capitan came out, they were trying desperately to upgrade iPhoto because iPhoto had this huge library problem. As soon as you went above, I think it was 70,000 photos, the thing, the library would crash, it would be unstable and wasn't able to work. The people who originally were on the iPhoto team was an outside team. They were brought into Apple. They didn't originally work inside Apple. And then they left the company because they were of a certain age. And the story I worked out from bits of information I put together was the reason they had to stop Aperture was the people who were excellent at it no longer work for Apple. And they had a couple of choices, which was we design this from scratch and we call it Photos because we can't license this other stuff because we've got patent issues. And so they ran up against that. The other factor which came out very easily, which was very interesting to notice, we're thinking about it from a Western perspective. The other aspect was looking at what Samsung were doing and what was happening in Asia. And one of the theories was that photo management wasn't a big thing over there and he just wanted it to work and plug it in and get it to go. And so one of the things they were thinking was just make iPhoto better because people just want to get a phone, as you were saying, put all the engineers on making the iPhone better. And they had the difficult choice. Do we stay with making world-class photography and world-class video, which is predominantly Europe and America-based, or do we compete with Samsung directly and put our best developers on making sure iOS is brilliant. Also, don't forget that Apple have, to this date, a very, very strong record for security software. They've got this huge bug bounty program. They work very tirelessly to make sure that it's very tough and very resilient. And I think that they felt that they couldn't give that same high-grade resilience to Aperture. And so they just sort of had to sort of gently retire it, not wanting it to be retired, but was sort of forced into a difficult situation.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
If you look at the number side of it, there must be, what, a few hundred thousand maybe using Aperture as opposed to millions who use Photos. So yeah. It's a, yeah, you have to go where I suppose where the horse leads at times. But as I said, it's a shame. It was, for me, it was a perfect product. It worked really, really well. And there's workarounds, and I'm struggling to use it now. But yeah, I would like to have one system to do the whole thing. So yeah, we'll continue to try. Anyone out there knows a really good system, please let us know. I'll be more than happy to have a look at it and see what else we can do with it.
What you do is get a Mac Mini, run Leopard on it. Or Snow Leopard, and put Aperture on, and that's how you get around it.
I know.
Yeah, you could be right, actually. That might be a way around it.
No, you actually, I tried something like that because, you heard of Dragon Dictate? And I used to love that application. I still use it, but they discontinued as well. They dropped it. It still survives, even up until Big Sur. But I tried to use it on an older OS system, and it was just too much of a hassle to go back to the old system because I'm just, I got to keep running on the new one, right? But that's really scary when you think about an application that you use and you have workflows built around it. It's part of your day-to-day thing that you do, and then all of a sudden it's gone. It's really scary. I think about that with Keyboard Maestro or Better Touch Tool or anything can happen to these developers, and I'm just wondering, like, will anybody pick it up and keep it going? But Dragon Dictate, that was just a major thing, particularly for people who, couldn't physically type, they depended on that application. And it's hung in there, but it's not like it used to be. And it took a long time for it to mature. Because I think it was another application before that called Speak Something. And so they took it over and it took, I went through each iteration of that thing. Sometimes they would release the updates too soon and there would be bugs in it, but everybody stuck with it. But then they just finally dropped it.
In speaking about how we put reliance in software, how do you keep all of your automations working together? So there's lots of arguments over which one is the best program. People like DevonThink or people really like OmniFocus. OmniFocus has a lot of followers because something we picked up on earlier was the original designer behind Otto the Automator now works with OmniFocus and is helping them develop OmniFocus. I don't know if you have a favorite. I've been trialing lots of different ones. To be honest, I really like one that we bought up before. So I ditched some well-known Apple built-in software and moved to Drafts purely for the fact that it's built into so many different things. So you can write in there and it can go to WordPress, or you can write some text and it will go into AirMail. There's so much more integration is probably the right word. How do you keep things integrated? What would you say is the best way of doing it?
I did an article about this. I use applications for specific things. So I have about 5 different notebooks that I use. And Drafts is one of them. I use Drafts on my iOS devices the most because I can just quickly jot notes in there. So that's for quick notes. And then I have Nimbus Notebook. It's sort of like Evernote. And I use Nimbus because I got a lifetime subscription to it. So, but it's really great. I think it competes really well with Evernote. And I like Nimbus because I can share notebooks and notes to other applications. I can share them out to other people. So I use that as well. It's like for some of my clients, I can just share the notebooks or notes, what have you. So I use that. And I also went through a lot of task managers. I tried at least 7 of them, including OmniFocus, but I finally settled on ClickUp. ClickUp is fairly new. It's been around for, I think, a couple of years, maybe. It has everything. It has, whatever you want to do in ClickUp, you can do it. And so I don't look anymore for task managers now that I'm in ClickUp because it just has different types of views. You can do NAT views. You can do the typical list view, the traditional list view. You can just do all kind of views in there, calendar view in there. It has everything. And every week they bring out a new update on ClickUp. They got some $1 million investment into their application, and they just keep growing it. And so I just haven't looked back. I haven't looked at anything else. I think the last one I was on was Todoist, but Todoist, I kept running into problems where they just couldn't do things that I wanted to. And ClickUp just solved all those problems. And, you know, I'm kind of an affiliate for ClickUp, so I haven't had to pay a lot of money for the update. But even if I had to pay the full price for the subscription, I would do so. It just solves all of my problems. You know, I love it.
That's really cool, because I think at the moment I'm struggling to decide which one to use. So I've kind of trialed each one. Lots of people really like Notion, but I just don't like the interface. That doesn't kind of win it for me. It looks very much like a paper notebook. I might try DevonThink next, but I think that's very much database software. If somebody has a suggestion, let us know.
It felt a little bit too complicated for me. I tried it, but I just felt like I was spending too much time trying to figure it out. And that's what I had, the same problem with OmniFocus. I spent more time trying to figure the thing out than I actually used it. For me, it has to be simple and fast, and it has to be intuitive to a certain extent. I mean, I'll invest some time on the front, but if it keeps feeling like it's too complicated, then I'll let it go. But yeah, but I heard different things. I heard it's developed a lot. Scrivener has developed over time as well. Someone I've used for writing long form documents and things of that sort. So I love that, but it has a high learning curve.
Thank you, Bakari. As we move on with our show, we've come to the section which is Did You Know?, where each of the panel share a tip or trick which you may not have come across whilst using your Mac. First up is Martin.
The one I've come across things, if you go into search on your phone and just type in back tap, it'll take you to the section in the accessibility. And you can set that button to any number of different uses, three taps on the back of it. In my case, I use it for screen grab. So if I'm talking to someone on the phone and whatever, I can just quickly tap the logo at the back, it will take the screenshot. But you can set it to a whole load of different range of things, and it's a very useful little feature that, as I said, for me saves me a lot of aggro, but trying to get to press the home, press the volume button up, volume button with the side button, you know, is it which one? If you press the wrong one, all of a sudden you've got an emergency call going off. So yeah, for me, it's very helpful just to have a quick, easy method to take a screenshot.
So for those who use printers, and I know printers are sort of archaic to some people, there's a reset printer system built into System Preferences. So if you go into System Preferences and you go your printers and scanners, you'll see the column on the left-hand side, and it will show you a little printer, and it will either be a red, orange, or green. Green meaning it's currently turned on and it's active. Orange is idle, red is disconnect. And you think, okay, nothing special there. Click the little padlock, you unlock it, you can add a printer, take away a printer. But did you know that if you control click or right click in that white space, you get a little contextual menu come up and it says reset printer system. Now, what gets interesting is if you hit reset printer system, it deletes the preference files, the downloads files, and the print queue. So it does four things in one go. Now, this is very fast if you're trying to troubleshoot, because what can sometimes happen is the Apple version of the driver may not work sometimes with the slightly legacy mode of printers, because most printers want to talk to OS or something even earlier than that. They don't want to come into the 21st century. So you've got 21st century computer having to downgrade to sort of 1980s software and then go back up again. And sometimes this can cause a problem. So I just thought I'd let people know that. The other thing is sometimes you can just sort of Google the right driver, but that's a waste of time most of the time. What I find is quite useful is just reset printer drivers and remove everything and then re-add it. And you'll be surprised the amount of times that fixes the problem.
But mine's not I don't know if it'll count as a did you know, but I think it's one of those things that's underappreciated. So for on my iPhone, the thing that I use the most is like when you do the swipe left, the bit when you move things to the right, and then you've got the left-hand screen that's got all your favourite bits on it. Now, I know you can do clever things now, but I just like the fact that I've got my favourite things. I've got an app that tells me how long a bus is going to be, that tells me my battery for my, you know, my watch, my headphones, stuff like that. So I like that. That's my little favourite bit. There's loads of them. If the app does it, there'll be a widget on it and you can customise it for the things you want. So I'll have music.
I have it set up so that it automatically picks up the nearest bus stop. So I just swipe that side and it shows me where the bus stop is, so I can then see when the next bus is turning. You think, okay, why would that be so useful? Well, what happens if you're on a part of the city you're in, which you're not familiar with, or you're in a different country? It will automatically pick up geographically based. So I find that quite useful.
Depressing as it is, I could see what the weather's going to be like in the next hour. I'm not sure that helps much sometimes, but, you know, it's nice to know if you can be rained on.
So for my did you know, I like using lots of desktops. So I have spaces set up. And obviously, you may or may not know, but the shortcut is control and then one of the digit numbers across the top to switch between, depending on how many spaces you have. However, did you know you can change the desktop for each individual space? And it's really simple. All you have to do, as you would do with a normal change of wallpaper, is to right click and change wallpaper, dependent on which one of your spaces you are on. So at the moment, I use 3 desktop spaces. So I have 3 different wallpapers, dependent on when and where I'm working or what I'm doing with it. And it's really handy if you share your screen a lot on Zoom.
The other thing you can add to that, once you've got more than one desktop screen, you can right click on the icons in the dock and you can say open in this particular space, so it will automatically open everything in that, so it then keeps all your screens nice and tidy, which comes in very useful because you can have all your clutter on one and then you can then go to the next one, so you could then self go, oh yeah, I got nothing open, and you could look at stuff and then Finder in one and iTunes in another. And although I use control left and right on the cursor keys, I find that easier because sometimes I don't know which space I've left it in. So I go control left or control right, and then I can find it. And you probably know about the split screen one, whereby if you put something into full screen and then you drag it out of your space, it will then go into split screen. So you can have the two of them side by side, which is also quite useful.
I don't have a real did you know, but I want to challenge people to go on their phone, go to settings, accessibility, and then go to touch and turn on assistive touch. When you turn it on, you'll get a floating dock and on your screen. From there, you can put all kinds of things in that dock. You can have a button for screenshot. You can have a button to restart your phone, which for the latest phones, it's kind of hard to restart the phone. You have to kind of do a couple of different little things to restart it, but it has a restart button. But it has just a lot of different things, and I keep on my phone. It's really kind of, you know, unobtrusive. Kind of fades away when you're not using it. And but you can do a screenshot, volume up, volume down. You can do Siri. It's a whole bunch of different buttons you can put in that touch. And I've just been using that for a couple of years now. But definitely check it out if you haven't tried it. If you do a double tap on that touch button, you can take a screenshot. You can assign whatever you want to those taps. So you can have like a long press or a double tap or a triple tap and have it do a certain actions there. So check it out if you haven't tried it.
That's awesome. We've come to the end of our show for yet another week. And first up, we shall say thank you to Tina. Thank you for this evening.
Thank you. No, it's been good fun and I've learned a lot. But I hope everyone has a great time and stays safe out there.
And we'll also say thank you to Alistair this evening. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. It's been very informative podcasts this evening. We've learned a lot.
Brilliant. Thank you. And let's say thank you to Martin this evening.
Good night all from me.
And we'll also say thank you very, very much. I know we've kept him very busy this afternoon, to our guest. Thank you, Bakari. Thank you for taking the time out to speak to us today.
Well, thank you too. I really appreciate it. And so it's on a Sunday here, so it's great. I spent some time this way. And it's been really nice. I'm going to look forward to listening to your podcast. And I have it on my phone, so I'm definitely checking it out. And it's great to just be able to talk to people overseas, you know. So awesome. Thank you so much.
That's brilliant. And I shall also say thank you very much to our listeners. And until next time, thank you and goodbye. Bye.